Hi, my name is Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
And this is Edge Cases, a podcast about often Apple-related software development and the joys of ad-sponsored app development. This is episode 9. We're recording on Saturday, July 14th, 2012. What's our topic today, Wolf?
I'm talking about the pros and cons of Arc.
Alrighty. So a couple of things before we get started. Actually, first of all, not even mentioned on my list here. So I noticed your laughter at that at sort of the little topic there.
Right.
That's actually one of my goals of this podcast. It's if I don't make you laugh, then I feel like I've failed somehow. Now that doesn't mean that you should, you know, fake laughter. No. We don't want that. But I do feel like I need to try harder.
Okay.
So gonna do that. Okay, so on to the first actual thing I want to talk about. I had mentioned on a previous episode, I don't remember which one, that you could go to our website, edgecasesshow.com, and add a /1 or /2 or whatever to the episode number and get to the episode page. So that's we want to do that, but that's not actually currently true. So if you've tried that and it doesn't work, sorry, I misspoke. And I guess maybe we might be somewhat close to doing that. It sounds like, Wolf, that thing you sent me was...
We have a meta redirect, and the problem is we're hosting the site off Amazon, static website hosting S3, so we can't do anything fancy server-side, so best thing we could do is a meta redirect.
Okay, yeah, so that'll open the actual page. Now, the pages for the specific pages for the podcast episodes are, their names are a combination of the number for the episode and then the title of it, so it's something that's always going to be too long to spell, but you'll be able to go to that /1, and then it will... turn into that page, right?
Right.
Is that
yeah?
Okay. So you know, and that's fine. That's fine by me. It's just mostly I just want to make it very easy for people to get to it because you know, once we have 70 episodes, it's gonna be a little harder to find it on the general website. However, for right now, that is what I suggest. If you want to find the page for a specific episode, go to the whole page and just scroll to it for the moment. Okay. For those of you in San Francisco, there is now a Cocoa Heads chapter there. Wolf, you've heard of Cocoa Heads?
I have. We have a local chapter called NS Schomburg. Oh, wait a minute. That's NS Coder. Yeah, we also have another local chapter for Cocoa Heads, and that means downtown in Chicago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's NS Coder Night, and then there's Cocoa Heads, and they're a little different. But in any case, there's a new Cocoa Heads chapter in San Francisco put together by Jonathan White. On Twitter, he is Schwa, S-C-H-W-A. Everybody loves the S-C-H, right? So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But... And I believe they meet the second Thursday of every month. And the reason I'm going through all this is because I will be giving a talk about edge cases at the next meeting, the August meeting. So, and apropos, also, I believe on Twitter, Schwa has put a little quote about the edge cases show, right? He said, listening to the edge cases podcast, Wolf is exactly as grumpy as he is on Twitter.
Right? Do I actually seem that grumpy on Twitter?
So I don't really see it. I mean, I think like kind of the point for me of this podcast is that we are bringing a bit of a different perspective to things than most people do. We're kind of thinking through certain things that maybe other people are maybe being a little bit more Pollyannish about.
you expose your bias just by using the word Pollyanna. Yeah,
I am, right? Well, sure, and that's fine. And if you want to listen to that, then you listen to our show. But I can see how some people would translate that as grumpy, but you know, that's not what I would say. But I think it's funny. So if you want to see that quote on a slide, then come to Cocoa Heads next month.
Okay.
And then the last thing is on the most recent. Episode of the Postmodem podcast, which is a podcast by Cocoa developers Colin Barrett, Patrick Thompson, and Philip Bowden. Mm-hmm. They mention how they all met at various C4 conferences. So I thought that was neat. That's episode 3, Contrarianism by Proxy. I don't believe they have a web page, but I'll put a link to their FeedBurner page in the show notes.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that's it. So I guess we're ready to go.
Okay. So this is probably, it's easy to say this is the most eagerly awaited episode of
it. I think it is. Yeah.
Because it's the only episode we've ever talked about ahead of time, kind of accidentally. I forget how it all started, but there was a commotion on Twitter about Arc, I guess kind of led by me. Actually, yeah, I think it was actually Buzz talking to Dave Weinman, Buzz Anderson talking to Dave Weinman. And, Dan Weinman.
Right.
And
it was a bunch of people going on a little bit about.
Yeah,
about
I kind of poked the bear there. Oh no, that's a that title potential.
There you going.
Anyway, yeah. So. So it was interesting. I'm glad I wrote up my notes on this a month back, because people were making a lot of the same points that I made, but fortunately those were all kind of sub-points. So I was able to agree with a lot of people, but kind of you know, say that that's part of my larger point. But
right.
But so I guess I should actually start talking about these points instead of this that. So I'll just get into it. So I'm not saying that ARC is this terrible thing that you should avoid. In fact, I will show my belief in it by listing a few of its benefits. And these are kind of the, not really the kind of the Apple stock benefits, but along those lines, because obviously Apple wants to talk highly about ARC. Of course, a benefit is less typing. You don't have to actually type the retains, the releases, and the auto releases. So this less physical typing and less kind of manual memory management gunk in your code that you have to kind of look beyond, because you don't, you know, it's basically implementation detail.
Right, and that you can get wrong.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. a good point. Do you actually make mistakes with retain and release?
Of course, never. I've never made a mistake.
I just, maybe I fix them so rapidly. I can't remember a time where I've made a mistake. So maybe I'm the superhuman programming god. I don't think so. But, but.
Oh, you are.
Because that's the other famous tweet where I wrote a two-line function. I had a bug in both lines. So I'm totally not superhuman programming.
I love that tweet.
Yeah, I'm
that
sure.
That's so great.
Can talk to Jeff Johnson to dig that URL up. But, yeah, so I don't know. I don't remember making, I've made memory management mistakes in terms of like ownership semantics and stuff like that. That's sure. Maybe that, but the actual typing, not so much. Anyway. Another benefit of ARC is that it is faster than manual retain counting and auto-release pools. So with manual reference counting, I guess I call it retain counting, I should say, reference counting, at the very least, even if you don't invoke auto-release pools, you have to send the release message. So you alloc init something, it comes back with a retain count of 1, and you have to at least send that release message. And in ARC, you don't send that release message, and what ARC writes for you is opc underscore release. It writes that function for you. And thus, inherently, that opc release function calls are faster than message sends. They kind of have to be, because message sends are actually implemented in terms of opc message send. So message sends themselves are actually function invocation. So thus, going right to the code in a static function where you don't have to jump through level and pointer interaction will be faster than just sending a message. And so that's there. I like to say it's insignificantly faster than a message send. So right there. And then there's the NS auto release pool. So ARC is faster than auto release pools, but Mike Ash had a post a while back. The title is Auto Release is Fast, and he lives up to his title that he did some profiling about how fast auto release pools are, because auto release seems like it has the potential to be slow because it's all dynamic and it's using thread local variables or something like that, and it's you're dynamically adding objects to this kind of stack that you're not directly manipulating and you don't have direct access to. You have to access through something like a thread local variable, so it seems like it has the potential for being slow. But in his testing, he's found that, and I'll quote him here, creating and destroying auto-release pool is about as expensive as creating and auto-releasing an NS object. So this is, so really, if you're allocating, if you have a loop where you're worried about actually even allocating NS objects, then you probably have a real concern, but most of us don't care.
Right, yeah, the other thing is, the only other thing I've seen is people don't necessarily want them to grow too large.
Right.
If you're creating a lot of objects, but if they're not actually that expensive to make and use, then you can make new ones, let's say, every so many iterations of a loop or something like that.
Sure. I mean, obviously you can loop through something a million times and you're creating a million objects, but you'd be creating those million objects even with manual retain and manual release.
Sure.
So that's, so yeah. So, and again, so, you know, it boils down to, you know, and NS auto release pools are, you know, objects in the old right, so sending them the drain message is more overhead. And so there, and of course, you know, adding to an array, whatever it's doing that, keeping track of the things it needs to release, that is some overhead too. That's message sends there. So inherently, by Arc inserting OPSI release calls for you, that's inherently faster than having this dynamic thing of auto release pools. But really, that's also kind of basically insignificant too. What really where Arc wins is that is the compiler optimization that's possible. That so basically, our Clang goes through, and there's this Arc optimization phase where it inserts a bunch of really, really redundant retained releases. Like, you look at, like, the method calls, and I tried to hunt this down where I saw this. I think it might have been in a dub slide or something. But it's just like, it's basically wrapping every method invocation, every function invocation with, like, retains and releases, and it's really bloating your code up. But then it's able to walk through and do that nice static analysis to figure out what's needed and what isn't, and basically throws away everything that isn't needed. So the kind of dynamicism that auto-release pools give you, Arc can eliminate and can do the static analysis, and this would put the retain exactly where it's needed.
Right, and by doing it at the end of the after everything else has been figured out, it doesn't need to be that smart, because it doesn't need to figure out all these individual factors that you can just take the end result and go through it in one pass or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And another important thing about Arc is that it brings a better ownership model to Objective-C. So Arc adds additional variable level ownership qualifiers like weak and strong. And Coco has been plagued by this really poor semantics for, like, when you have objects and they point to each other, what does that mean? And you have the unretained delegate problem, where if they point at each other, you have a reference cycle, so a retain cycle, so they will never be deallocated. So it's typical that delegates won't be retained to try and break that cycle. But then you have things like NSURL connection, which will retain its delegate, and it's really a big mess. It's largely kind of, if you're lucky, it's written up in the docs about what's actually going on, but usually you just find out by trial and error. And what Arc gives us actually keywords to annotate our code to explicitly call out. I mean, this is better than documentation. This is actually functioning code that explains to the programmers and the compiler what actually is being owned and so forth, and what happens when the object is being deallocated. Like, what should happen then? So this is a big win.
Sure, and properties introduced some of that before this. But yeah, it's an ongoing steps I think they're taking to make the language more explicit.
Right, and you're right, the properties. But what's great about Arc is that actually brings it even down to the variable, like local variable declaration level.
And that's
so you can
true,
put
yeah.
that underscore weak or underscore strong in front of things to make it very clear, even at the variable level. So that's pretty nice.
Although, do you still use regular property declaration? I mean, excuse me, regular IVAR declarations?
Oh, you see, that's the thing. Is like, you know, everyone was moving away from it because properties was obviously the way to go, especially now that we have synthesized by default and 64-bit runtime, you don't even need to have the IVAR declaration at all because it's totally redundant. But now Arc, as a twist to this, that a lot of these things that you use properties for, you can just do with an IVAR now. So I'm still just basically assuming properties for everything, because a lot of the times the properties will use, you know, property syntax when you use the dot syntax, dot notation syntax. So yeah. I'm pretty much just staying with properties for now, even though a lot of my uses could be replaced with the straight up IVARs again.
I hadn't even thought of it that way, but yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm.
Another great thing about Arc is that, you know, it enforces these conventions. So it obviously brings better ownership semantics. But by looking at the names of things and you know, names of your methods, you know, with the new or begins with a copy or what have you, that, you know, these are the conventions that were critical for Coco programmers, but Arc is now enforcing that. And so that definitely helps. A lot of these conventions, you know, they were written down, but it's one of these things that you had to learn. A lot of people learn by trial and error, and now the compiler will straight up tell you, you know, this is what you mean when you write this. And so that's the type of explicitness I really like.
Yeah, and the compiler errors are just much more verbose than they used to be.
Oh, yeah. LLVM and Clang is so great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And another great thing about Arc is that it basically, it increments state-of-the-art static analysis. So when you do the build analysis, build and analyze, that chugs for a while because they're doing some serious static analysis. But Arc, you know, so static analysis is slow, but Arc isn't. Even though Arc is static analysis, they see they've and, you know, the state-of-the-art for static analysis is Arc right now because they've made it so fast. And not all, obviously it's not doing the full bore stack analysis, but the type of static analysis it's doing all the time. And I haven't noticed a slowdown in my compilation speeds on Arc code. So I consider that a big win. It's obviously much faster than the build analysis code path. Granted, the build analysis is doing a lot more, but this is a big win. I mean, this is something that is a legitimate advancement in, you know, basic computer science, that we can basically kind of assume that this type of static analysis is built in now.
I know you've been sort of down on mainstream companies using, you know, the latest advances from computer science. So to hear you say that is, you know, kind of a big deal.
Yeah. It's a crumb, and you have to take the crumbs where they fall.
Okay.
And this one is I'm trying, you know, do the benefits first. So it's kind of a fractional idea that I'll fill out later on once we get to the issues. But I want to say that Arc is interesting and beneficial in the way that it interleaves program execution with resource management. And this is interesting because it's efficient, because you're using, when you think of like object graph, you think of like a heap, and the point of Arc is that the resource management timeline exists in three different areas. It exists in the heap and on the stack, and indeed the code stream itself, the instruction stream. And basically, every bit of memory on your system is being used to track and manage resources. And this is a bit of a subtle point, which I'll come back to. But thus, I put it here as the final benefit that came to my mind when I was writing up this list, that interleaves program execution with resource management. Okay, are you ready for the issues?
I'm ready.
Okay. So I was very fortunate that I brought this up because on Twitter, because I got a bunch of good feedback, so that I will interleave between all these issues, and looks like right, I have...
And some good titles, too.
Probably. And yes, auto-release the hounds, I believe.
I really like that one.
Yes, I have 6 points here, so I'll go get through them. So issue number one. Oh, by the way, I had five benefits, too, so only one more issue than benefits. And those benefits are real. So my first issue is that Arc is an additional layer of complexity. And I don't think anyone really can argue with that, although I'll talk about a couple of bullet points against that later on. And so Matthew Bischoff tweeted, I really like this tweet because it sums up pretty well, is that Arc is a high-speed bike that looks like a tricycle to a novice. And that really kind of sinks in because especially with the way Apple talks about Arc is to say, hey, manual memory management is gone. We're doing this all for you. And and really, like, Arc, in my opinion, is not aimed at the novice. I mean, it can be used by the novice. And I'll talk about the value decisions you need to make later, whether or not if you're learning Objective-C, whether you should learn Arc or you learn a manual reference counting. But it really, Arc, in my opinion, is geared towards professional Cocoa developers that have been doing this for a while and have no retained reference counting cold. It's Chris Cheslak had another good tweet on this. He says that he sees Arc as a replacement for typing retained release, not knowing it. And so the idea is that, you know, you still need to know how reference counting works, but Arc saves you from having to actually type it out. So I forget, have you actually used Arc for any of your projects yet?
I'm using it for my current home project.
Okay.
Which has been going on for some time, not
so if it's been going on for some time, it sounds like you had to go through an Arc migration.
Yes, I did do that. That wasn't so bad. There wasn't that much code at that point. But I'm actually dealing with some of the, not necessarily stuff that doesn't work, but how to structure it, and we can get back to that at the end of it. But
cool.
But yes, I have used it some.
Okay, so there's and so in my opinion, you need to know reference counting one way or another. So there's, I don't know if you remember this, but there's these Fram oil filter ads. I think they're from like the 70s. And I think the only reason I know about it, because despite the gray hair, that it's a little bit before my time. But I am pretty sure like my father like had old like Poplar Mechanics magazines that I would read. And I think this might even be on TV commercial, although I don't remember this. But there were these Fram oil filter ads. And the tagline was, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. So basically, it's this like grease monkey who's working on your car. And he's like, you can buy the inexpensive Fram oil filter and pay for it now, or you're going to buy a new engine later. And right. I think this applies to reference counting. It's like, you learn reference counting now when you don't have a project that's crashing on you and a deadline to hit, and you've set aside time to actually learn reference counting and like the fundamentals of COCO, or you're gonna have to pay the big expense later when you have bad ideas about how things work, and you have something that isn't working right, and now you don't know how long it's going to take to learn.
Sure, that makes sense.
So. And an important thing is also that Core Foundation and its friends, its all the C-based APIs, still use manual reference counting. So basically every non-trivial Mac and iOS app ends up using Core Foundation. And if you don't know how to actually correctly manage memory in that environment, then you're out of luck. You're definitely going to have a lot of issues there. So it's not like you can just ignore manual reference counting now, and Arc is going to take care of everything for you. You need to learn this stuff sooner or later, and I happen to think that sooner is better.
Well, they have all those very long, rather confusing things that you can cast stuff to for Core Foundation objects where you need to know exactly what the ownership model is and how you want to treat it. And, you know, I've seen the sessions about it, and it's still a bit confusing to me what you should use when and how you should think about it. Because they do try to convert that stuff too. They try to make it such that you're not just counting up and down, but I'm not sure it works all that well.
Yeah, and this is what I say is an additional layer of complexity. It's not like that Apple has made all this complexity go away. They've built a fairly complicated layer on top of all this manual reference counting, and it's a leaky abstraction. And I'm not saying leaky abstractions are a death sentence. You know, modern software is on top of a very large pile of leaky abstractions. But you need to identify for what it is. And if you don't know what's going on under the hood, you might be able to write the abstraction pretty well, but you might hit a wall. And so Rich Ward-Wells had a couple of good tweets here that I also think captures it. And it was interesting because I agree with it, even though he was basically trying to argue the other side, which he says, Arc makes good programmers better. It doesn't help bad programmers. Bad programmers are going to write bad code either way. So I agree with this. And he also said that Arc is awesome. It saves time and stupid mistakes. Even good devs aren't infallible. But you still have to be able to grok what goes on behind the scenes, which is basically my argument, at least in bullet point one.
Mm-hmm.
So bullet point two is a pretty simple thing, is that Arc is opaque. And that means that you relinquish control to it, and it's not clear exactly what it's doing. Basically, the only way to see where it's inserting, retains, and releases for you is to look at the disassembly. And I know a lot of people are not very comfortable with looking at assembly generic thing. And also there's obviously a bunch of different function calls, depends on what it needs to do. So you need to understand what each of those function calls are doing to maintain your Arc happy land. So there's, we're talking a little bit about on Twitter. It's like, ideally it would be awesome if you're just like, you know, you had your Arc code and you said, hey, show me the retains and releases that you'll generate for me. And this like would pop up in a little gray or something that shows you didn't write this, but this is what I'm writing for you. But I understand, like, because I told you that, you know, if you saw what Arc was doing, you'd see two phases, and you'd see the phase where it goes whole hog and puts retains and releases throughout your code like a madman, like a retain release shotgun attacked your code, and with and then the optimizer comes through and rearranges things, reduces redundant expressions, and does all the type of crazy static analysis where it, and the problem is by that time it's hard to go back from that. So from there's like two phases of your code here. Like there's the one that would look ridiculous. So you look at the shotgunned retained releases and you say, "Oh my god, look how inefficient this is." But the optimized stuff is like at that point it's really hard to take this optimized thing, this optimized assembly that represents, you know, constructs that you can't even do in C, and kind of then remap it onto C code to show it to you. So it's a hard problem, and so I'm not saying that, you know, the Apple's lazy or they're bad for not doing this. It's a hard problem, but still it makes it very hard to understand exactly what Arc is doing for you. So it is opaque.
Yeah, it's doing things according to its own logic that would need to be translated into something that a human could understand.
Right.
So, right. So it's like an alien reached down into your code and did all this incomprehensible stuff to it. Right.
Alien reference counting, okay.
that's right. That's what it really means.
Okay. So Stefan Itterheim, I think is how you pronounce his name. He has a website, learn-cocos2d.com. And I assume it's tied to a book or something. That sounds like a bookish title. But he had this blog entry titled "Busted: 8 Reasons Not to Use Arc." So these, you know, here are 8 reasons not to use Arc, and he busts them. So I thought that would be a good proxy, you know, for me to argue against, because he's done the hard work of kind of laying out the reasons why the Arc bashers are wrong. So his first point is that, which is one of these, is of course his anti-reason, is the Arc takes away control. And so he points out how Arc doesn't take away control, and I totally agree with that point. I don't think that's a valid reason not to use Arc. I mean, if you look at Arc, I should put this under the benefit bullet point, but Arc is extremely deterministic. I mean, you obviously can throw auto-release pools into the mix too, but that's actually one of the big benefits of Arc, is that it's extremely deterministic.
Right, and they talk about that at WWDC, that they say that, yeah, it's not like garbage collection, which is sort of random, could happen various times that you can't predict. No, this is all straightforward.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the garbage collection angle, because I'll be talking about that a little bit later. And another bullet point is that Arc hasn't proven to be reliable yet, and that he points out that, hey, this is Apple's, you know, putting all their weight behind it, and Arc removes the burden from you to manage the memory objects. It's not a new framework. It's not a rewrite. It doesn't break backwards compatibility. Apple's, you know, 1,000% behind it, all that. Of course, people with longer time frames know that Apple's put their effort sincerely behind many projects, and many of them have been pulled out from underneath us. So, yeah. But, you know, I'll give Apple the benefit of the doubt here, and Stefan too, that, you know, I will say, okay, yes, this is true. But I kind of feel that he does a good job of rebutting his own point here, and he does point out, then again, so many dive straight into using beta software without even considering the flip side, like not being able to submit their apps, not being allowed to ask questions in a public forum, not getting support from library developers, and he lists a few reasons why. You know, these beta releases have, or, you know, not beta releases, but new things have sharp edges. So I think he does a good job of addressing that point. So, you know, I won't really engage it here. Another argument he makes is that Arc isn't worth learning so many things. So he's kind of like this stick with the tried and true method, blindfolds on, and he has a sigh there. And again, this is not my argument. Mike Ash said that tweeted that the Arc detractors seem like crotchety old men, like not kind of stuck in their ways, don't want to learn new tricks, you know, old dogs, new tricks. And I think that's a unfair characterization of my belief system, and I'll kind of leave it at that. I'm actually probably in the scheme of things quite radical that I want to throw away Objective-C and force everyone to learn new things, including myself. So I don't think that's a fair argument. Arc is not supported by insert library name here. And he says, maybe this is just a cheap excuse repeating what others have said, or simply bridge casting confusion. But it also can be true, so I let this one slide under some circumstances. Well, that's very nice of him to let that one slide, because it is true. So I'll just leave that lie. And now we start getting to some good ones. Another bullet point of his is, you still need to know how memory management works before you can use Arc. And he calls this the everyone needs to know assembler attitude. And he trots out this little quote, he puts in a block quote at least. He says, yes, we all can drive perfectly fine, thank you. We don't need to understand how the engine works. And I think that's actually the quote he chose there about how we all can drive, you can drive a car without knowing how the engine works. I think that's actually a good metaphor, because we are building the cars. That, yes, we drive around our own cars, and yes, we can get into other people's cars and drive them around, but fundamentally, we are the engineers here, and we are the people who are putting together the cars. And so we actually need to know how they work. So we are the ones who can weld the engine shut, we also need to know exactly how long this thing can last and what type of inputs and outputs it has. He also makes a claim that you have nothing to gain from learning how to use retain, release, and auto-release. And so this is an interesting thing. So it's like, you're learning Objective-C new, right? The question is, do you learn ARC, or do you learn manual reference counting, or MRC? And so, Andrew, if someone came up to you and said, hey, I'm learning Objective-C in my first programming language, which should I learn? Which would you say he should learn?
Well, yeah, I was going to bring that up. First you say, well, learn C.
Oh, really? So you'd even argue start with the C language.
Yeah, because there are a lot of concepts in C that you should really have down. I mean, even just the concept of pointers, right? You're going to learn that if you learn C.
Okay, so it turns out that I'm sympathetic to the other side of the argument here. And that's because when I actually learned how to program, I started off programming. I went to a course. I didn't start off, but I went to a course when I got serious about learning programming that taught BASIC on IBM PC, a DOS PC. I think it was like DOS 2 or DOS 3 or something like that. And it was like over summer break or something, and I hated it. And it turned me off from programming altogether. And yes, it would have been a different no education show.
Right. Among other things.
Well, yeah, true. And what ended up sucking me into programming and filled out my current career is HyperCard. And it got me started because I could see results immediately at a very high level. So I've had friends who get burned out on fundamental stuff that where they don't see progress and it seems so far away to get anything real working that they just give up or they lose interest. And so I'm totally sympathetic to the argument where, yeah, there's seas of low level stuff to learn and maybe you even will need it one day, but the high level stuff I think is very persuasive. And so I think it depends on the person, but I had a friend who I was teaching iOS development to, and he's still learning. And the first thing we did is that I opened up Xcode, and we together, even though I mostly flew over his head, got to the point where we built a single view controller, single button iOS app. We could click the button, and it would log "Hello World," and so he would have something that's working and running, and he has an iOS app. So he doesn't really understand the syntax of language. Of course, the memory management he has no idea. But he had something working, and he could modify it. He could change the string output. He could change the button, and he could move things around. It was his app then, and he had something working. And I think I think it's a really good point. It's a value judgment, but I think that it's not altogether bad to not start at the very bottom and work your way up.
Okay.
So, then his next argument is, I'm in the middle of a project right now. And so his argument here is that you know, come on, just turn on Arc, see how bad, you know, it's not going to be bad at all. That don't use that as an excuse why you shouldn't use Arc. And this is interesting because this is another value argument. And so you have a project that you're in the middle of developing. It seems to me almost the height of irresponsibility to have something that you're working on developing. It'd be one thing if you're like in the first 5%, maybe you can turn on Arc and start learning this thing. But if you're, you know, in the middle, which as we know is not the middle, it's probably more like the 15% mark, really, it seems almost to the height of your responsibility to take this code that's basically working and throw a monkey wrench into the works and basically set yourself back. Because I think this is actually a contradiction in his argument. That here he's arguing that, you know, this low-level stuff isn't important in the previous argument. It's like, you know, you don't learn this stuff because you have an app to write. And yet he's saying, turn on Arc because it probably won't be that bad and it might be better later. And, like, your users, like, if you could, like, have a list of all the things that your software users don't care about, I think whether you're retaining, whether incrementing, decrementing retain counts manually or automatically, that seems like the probably one of the least things they could possibly be caring about.
My users will care. There you go.
Well, maybe if your users are actually other developers, I would give you that. But but this is value arguments. Like, do you want to work on the high level stuff? And I think that's great, fine. But you just can't just say, oh, then flip the switch, and you might set yourself back a few days as you get up to speed on this. That doesn't track to me. And his next bullet point is that after converting successfully to Arc, my project keeps crashing. In fact, he even has a little term for this. He calls it the post-Arc conversion crashes, which goes against his point that Arc is very reliable and you just should be using it. That, yes, you know, when you convert to Arc, you will have this thing called post-Arc conversion crashes, and there are a bunch of issues. A lot of people on Twitter argued, you know, Arc is rock solid. What's your problem? And if you go to OpenRadar and you search on Arc, you find a lot of open bugs. Granted, they tend to be on the, you know, on the edges of weird things that programmers are doing, but some of them aren't. And this is all technology has bugs in it, and Arc is not this magical happiness that will never go wrong on you. And those are the types of bugs that your users don't care about. And so his other point is that Arc is available in my project templates and doesn't seem worth the trouble. And I'll just give him that point. I agree with him there. So to show what a nice guy I am, I'll even give Stefan a good point here of another reason why you should use Arc. And that to me is like modern code. Like there is, as platforms evolve, and methods are deprecated and things are added, it might be easy to say, well, my code still works. And really what you're doing there is that you are postponing taking a loan out on the future.
You're paying later.
Yeah, you're paying later, right? Again, we keep on coming back to this idea, right? That actually, you know, when a new framework comes out that deprecates your previous framework or class or methods, like the time to do it is almost immediately. I agree with that because that's when everyone's having this question. Right, so the support is good. Everyone's running into this. You can tweet about it, and people know the answer. And you can, in the weird edge cases, you can also tweet about, and probably someone's already experiencing it right there. And
possibly talking about them on a podcast call.
There you go.
Old edge cases. Yeah.
And so if you postpone that, eventually that kind of the interest among the community, the documentation, this kind of, you know, isn't at the forefront anymore. So they're on to the next thing and the next thing. And so you'll end up building up this, it's not really, I wouldn't call it technical debt, although it seems very similar in my mind, where all of a sudden you have this like you have this carbon app that, you know, Apple's been supporting me, and then you can't do 64-bit, and all of a sudden it's like end of the road for you, and now it's all going to hit you at once. So so I would say that Arc is actually something you want to get on the bandwagon on, probably. I don't say you should turn on in the middle of a project, but when you start a new project, or if you're at the very beginnings of a current project, then it probably makes sense to turn on. And you should also go back, and after you've delivered value to your users, then you should probably go back and maybe for the next, you know, bug fix release or minor feature release or maybe a major one, then you should go back and turn on Arc, because you're going to have to pay that later, assuming that, you know, Arc is around. And for some reason, I do feel that Arc is probably going to be staying around more than Garbage Collection had.
Well, and you know why, right? Like, this is the whole thing. I don't know if we want to get into it right now, but, you know, GC is gone, is dead for one reason, and that's the iPhone. And that's, you know, if well, we can go into it later.
But no, this is actually good, because my next point is GC. So what about the iPhone is it that makes GC dead?
Okay, so I was looking on Wikipedia for the history of GC, and it made sense with what I remember from GC. I was at Apple at the time, that GC was released either before the iPhone was released or right after. In any case, as far as I worked it through, GC was being worked on at the same time as the iPhone was being worked on. So both going on at the same time, but the mm-hmm. teams couldn't talk to each other. So GC was introduced into a world where you had lots of spare cycles on your computing device, and those spare cycles were worth taking up with a new technology for the sake of making things easier for developers, so developers could get their apps out faster, both Apple and third-party developers. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole point of GC, right? And then suddenly you have this new platform that's extremely important to Apple, where suddenly the cycles are very important. Suddenly you can't just throw, you know, a new thread out for a collection at the same time you're trying to run your UI. And what I suspect is that, you know, they've spent the years since then trying to stuff GC into the iPhone. And what we're seeing is, you know, it didn't work. And someone had to say at some point, no, we've got to try something else. We can't, we've decided we can't defend retained release forever, but we want something that will work on the iPhone. And the result was Arc.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty much my understanding of the timeline too. And I have a few comments on that. Obviously, the iPhone is much more resource constrained than the desktop.
Yeah.
So it's both in processing speed and in memory, that both of those are things that are much much less plentiful on iOS devices. But that said, I always thought that I would say that theoretically, GC actually has the potential to be even better at operating in confined environment than C style, malloc, and free, and so forth, because it has fine grained knowledge of the object graph and exactly what's in use at any time.
Yeah,
I will say that's theoretical, because obviously there's realities that get in the way, and unfortunately one of those realities is that Objective-C is a C based language, and with all the problems of garbage collection that entails, and I believe that. Objective, like, so there's the Hans Boehm conservative garbage collector. And do you actually know how this works, Andrew?
I don't believe so.
It's what it does is it's a garbage collector for C programs. And how, and I don't know if it operates exclusively like this, but part of the way it operates is that it actually looks at your entire process address space, or at least maybe the heap part of it, one pointer at a time. It assumes that every 4 bytes or on 32-bit systems, or every 8 bytes on 64-bit systems, there might be a pointer there. And I would look at it and I would like, okay, are the lower 2 or 4 bits clear? And so it doesn't have the right alignment and doesn't look like it's pointing to into the heap or into the stack or what have you. And if so, then this might be a pointer. And it basically has to walk the entire memory and scan for addresses and then kind of build up this object graph based on what it scanned. And so because C doesn't have these facilities for high quality garbage collection, this, you have to kind of use this really hack around technique. And now the Objective-C garbage collector that Apple release does not do that. And well, I think it partially does that, but it definitely tries to do a kind of more object graph model. But it also has significant problems where it has to, when you access memory, it has to interpose little function calls there in order to understand, like, when you set a pointer, when you clear a pointer, when that it can update its idea of the object graph. So kind of my point here is that C fundamentally is very hostile to garbage collection. And so it's like, imagine you have a go-kart, right? This kind of low-level, kind of bare metal experience. And you put air conditioning in it. And you're like, you know, we've got the air conditioning in, and it blows right on your face. And it's kind of cool right there, but man, it's not very good. And it also sucks up a bunch of gas. And you're like, man, air conditioners aren't good.
Right, yeah.
And so it's like it's important to separate the two facets that C in general isn't very good. And so just because C itself, and when you try to bolt garbage collection onto it, it doesn't fit very well and doesn't work very well, does not mean that garbage collection in general is a failed experiment, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I won't go into too many details or any details actually, but that is my experience, because I spent a bunch of years working at Apple during the GC era, and we did see a lot of that, actually.
Oh, a lot of what?
A lot of problems with the fact that it was a C-based language that you were putting garbage collection on top of.
Right, yep. Right. And so a couple of other points underneath the GC isn't bad heading. So I tried to look this up before the show, but unfortunately it was not forthcoming. I believe, so one of the advantages of ARC is, one of the features is this thing called zeroing weak references. Do you know what those are, Andrew?
I do.
Okay, I'll let you tell it.
So if you mark a pointer as weak, what will happen is that it will not be a reference that counts against whether an object should be deallocated or not. So what object normally would, when all of its strong references are gone, it will be deallocated.
Right.
And weak references don't count. Mm-hmm. And then when it is deallocated, because there are no more strong references, that pointer that's pointing to it will be zeroed out under weak references.
Okay.
Zeroing weak references.
Mm-hmm. So if I gave you the spec and I told you how to implement that, how would you implement that feature, that zeroing weak reference?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, you're going to need to have the runtime keep track of all of the weak references everywhere, basically, and then be able to keep – you'll need to have some way to map the two. So you'll need to know, hey, when this guy is getting deallocated, have a list of, you know, pointers that are referring to it, and in order to null those out at the time when the object is being deallocated. So you need a fairly large-scale mapping infrastructure to make all of that work. And probably multi-threading would also make that even harder.
Yeah, and so my argument is that zeroing weak references are basically garbage collection, but without the niceties of garbage collection.
Right.
Because, I mean, so Mike Ashley did this thing where he actually built a cycle detector that operates on ARC, and he had a really hacked implementation. Yeah, wow. Spotify hosted this kind of two-phase presentation thing where they gave it two nice technical talks, and he was one of them. And his implementation is really whacked, and he'd be the first to tell you that. But it's basically, the point is that, you know, you kind of like, in order to track zeroing weak references, you basically have to track who knows what, both backwards and forwards. And between reference counting and the object graph about who knows what, that is basically GC. And so now, granted, you can probably most of the code that's executed maybe doesn't use zeroing weak references, and maybe it's kind of more of a tree topology and the object graph of who owns what, and that, of course, it would be more efficient. But I wonder how much of this actually does boil down to the fact that we are paying the GC tax, but we're not reaping the GC benefits in terms of all this complexity.
Well, it's interesting because I was actually going to write a post. I had actually started to write a post, but it sounded maybe a little bit too simplistic. But the idea for me when with my model in my current project at home is exactly that, is should I use weak references when I'm having objects within my trees point to each other as opposed to the downward from the top-down arrows of regular ownership? Should I have weak references so that I don't have any strong reference cycles at all? Mm-hmm. And it seems like from my perspective as the app programmer, it would be easier to understand and easier to maintain if I just used weak references all over the place to take care of all of that. But I was thinking exactly as I knew you were going to mention here, is if I instead made it such that I let there be strong references, but I had extra code that would break them when I knew I was removing objects from the tree, which is possible. If I did that in my own code, well, then I wouldn't have to worry about the system building up all of these weak reference tables for me. But I don't know. I suspect that the performance hit won't be that bad for anything other than massive amounts of data, that it's still worth it for the system to do it for me, because, of course, they can keep optimizing that in future releases.
Sure.
But it is something that I thought about. Because if you don't just use weak references everywhere, you are going to have strong reference cycles. You are going to have to write your own code to break them, and that's another opportunity for new mistakes to creep in.
Yeah. And finally, under the heading that GC isn't bad, I want to point out that this other standard knock you get against GC is something you mentioned, which is the indeterminate nature of it. Like, it almost seemingly randomly, your objects may come and go, or it might decide to reap, or what have you, usually on another thread. And I want to point out...
The other thread one was a killer in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah, because things may or may not fall out from underneath you, and that's especially if you think you have a strong reference, but really you just have a weak one, and things will randomly disappear out from underneath you. Yeah, that's real fun. But there's this outfit called Azul, and I don't know if they make their money from it, but they have this thing which is a pauseless garbage collector for Java, for the JVM. And how it works is that they do a good job explaining it, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the interview. And how it works is that most garbage collectors, they tend to create a bunch of garbage and try and postpone the amount of work they need to do at any given time, try and pushing off the stuff they need to do into the future. And then what happens is that they build up a bunch of garbage, and eventually they hit the wall and they have to reap then. And the incremental stuff tries to, clean up concurrently. But again, it's the idea that as it's going, it's trying to postpone expensive operations and push those into the future of copying and finding the references and deallocating objects.
Well, in examining the memory, that was my understanding. You need to stop everything dead to see what the state of things are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the stop the world collectors have to do that. There are non-stop the world collectors, yeah. And right. So what Azul's JVM collector does is that it does expensive operations all the time, that it never postpones operations. And what this ends up giving you is a deterministic GC that you pay, and it feels actually much like retain release as we know it today. That as soon as you allocate the object when you need it, and as soon as you're done with it, its ref count goes to zero and gets deallocated right then. And so basically they kind of implemented this very deterministic model into the JVM. And so these types of pauses that we think are intolerable for iOS devices, where when you're scrolling through, you don't want to ever, stop it scrolling because you have to reap, 256 megs of, or gigs of memory. That just won't happen because you'll be paying that, that 10 microsecond tax throughout, now not that's the end of your run loop, but throughout your entire use of those structures.
Yeah, not pay me later, but pay me all the time.
Yeah, yeah, we can keep on coming back to that analogy. Okay, and so for my final point, I can come back to that one benefit point that I mentioned before. And so ARC fundamentally interleaves program execution with resource management. And so this is a subtle point, which is why I went out of my way not to mention on Twitter. And so the entire idea here is that object graphs can stand alone. That when you look at object graph, you can look at it as a set of objects pointing at each other. And then separately, you can view operations on that object graph. And ARC, instead, kind of doesn't have true object graphs, in that these object graphs, in terms of like lifetimes and whether that object should be there or not, is actually interleaved with values on the stack and indeed the functions that's been written for you interleaved into your instruction stream. So you can't just go and look at your heap and understand whether that object is valid or not, because you know two instructions down might be an OPC release. So I don't know if that point is clear, but the idea of an object graph being able to be its own entity and be able to stand alone and be debuggable on it by itself is not possible with ARC.
It's like C++, right? It's the same idea that so much stuff is compiled into your application. So much of the data is basically analyzed and then thrown away once the code is generated, such that at runtime you can't do that same stuff that you want to with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Well, I'm surprised you couldn't put this into a 140 character tweet.
Yes, I probably could, but I don't think anyone would actually understand that. I'd have to probably use Chinese encoding. And to me, this is cynical. This is for the same reason we even in iOS devices, even on the original iPhone, Apple used Objective-C because they understood the overhead of message passing was worth it. And the type of people who believe that ARC is the future because GC is inefficient or something, it's like they're making that trade-off. It's a cynical view that our machines won't get faster, won't get better, that all we have is what we have today, which is I'm totally understanding of market realities. And obviously, it's really great to have a low-memory device that is very responsive. But I think basically CG was buried prematurely, and it was given a bad rap when it was a set of circumstances that really was beyond the concept itself. And because we're now interleaving our instruction streams with object graph management, it's just, as a benefit, as I mentioned, that's a higher information density encoding into the instruction stream itself, into the stack, into the heap. So it's fundamentally more efficient. But is it really? I mean, I think all this information that we've encoded into the instruction stream and into the stack, like, what is it on a fully loaded phone, iPhone? It's like maybe a meg, maybe two. Like, it doesn't seem like that much information to me that to keep track of, to keep the object graph its own entity, and allowing us to reason about it at a higher level and instilling the bottlenecks there that allow us to have a much fuller featured understanding and development tools to manipulate the object graph. Because right now it's all kind of glued together and each part is not separate, and so it the tooling there I really worry about.
Yeah, it's giving up a bit on the future.
Yeah,
seems to be the high level summary there. Mm-hmm. You know, I can actually add a little bit to this. Little Birdie has told me about some of the things going on with this transition. That the problem was not with the language, as you were saying, you know, the overhead of some of these things is not really that bad when you consider what a machine is capable of, even an iPhone. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the frameworks, now, I don't know, did you use GC much when it was around?
No, basically for the same reason why I haven't really deployed Arc is because, you know, retain release, I'm against it, but it's not hard.
Well, the GC, I mean, people were having problems with the frameworks because, you know, they all needed to be converted,
right?
You know, pretty much manually. You know, there wasn't a GC converter that would have worked on some of this very gnarly low-level code that was behind, you know, the frameworks that we use every day. And so it took a lot of effort, and there's, you know, buggy other stories I could tell you. And you know, the fact is that that would have needed to have been done on the iPhone to make GC work there. And that was the stumbling block.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does tie in with what you're saying in that it was looking at the future, looking at the cost it's going to take to get us to the future, and blinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have Arc,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, quite a different story than you know, the official, hey, this is all rosy and this is great and you should adopt it and you should forget that we ever had GC. So,
yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, Arc has a bunch of benefits and actually, you know, increments the state of the art. But it's unfortunately, it's poisoned GC in the minds of lots of programmers, and that's going to set our profession back.
Keep GC alive. We should make up T-shirts.
So it's funny because, like, I'm no fan of GC of you know, Objective-C GC, because I, you know, even though I hate retain release, I never switched to GC because I viewed it as a cost not worth paying. And don't think that's going to be the case with Arc. It seems to be getting better uptake and even bigger push from Apple. And so I'll adopt it in future software. But if, you know. Like these types of non-Pollyanna points, I just wanted to bring up.
Well, yeah, and I think I heard a couple people saying this when Arc was first announced, that, you know, people were saying, you know, can this really be it? Like, how far ahead will this get us? Because we're still going to need something better, something that's really the future at some point in the future. So, you know, it would be very interesting. Like, will they try to make this work for another 10 years?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, but is that an opportunity missed, as just as you were saying?
Yeah,
and you know, because various people, I think John Siracusa of Hypercritical has said, you know, that he would really love for there to be, you know, a new language which really does get rid of the baggage of all the old stuff, and Apple has just been unwilling to do that, even though it's really putting them further and further behind their competitors who have these languages which keep advancing the state of the art because they don't have this backwards compatibility. And, you know, you just keep thinking, well, they've got to do it eventually. I mean, I guess they don't.
No, I don't think they do.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. So that covers your 6 points?
That covers my 6 points.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up for me.
Yeah, I think we've got a pretty long show this time. So, alrighty. So, please visit our website, as I mentioned, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for information about the show, our iTunes link, everything like that. You can also find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S, Wolf, Wrench, the word rent, plus Z, plus S-C-H, and then also the Edge Cases Show Twitter feed as well. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.